This UCSD-TV program is a presentation of University of California Television for educational and non-commercial use only.
I'm Nick Ravelis, the host of UCSD-TV's Opera Talk and the Geisel Director of Education and Outreach for San Diego Opera. My passion is helping people understand opera and come to love it as much as I do. At San Diego Opera, my colleagues and I do that in many different ways, but one of my favorite events is the Artists' Roundtable. The San Diego Opera Artists' Roundtable is an intimate look at an exciting art form. I invite the principal artistic team for each production here to the Beverly Sills Salon for a freewheeling discussion before a live audience that covers everything from the music to the motivations of the characters to the director's stage vision and sometimes even a penetrating look at a singer's career. There's never a dull moment, and it's one of the joys of my job that I get to moderate these discussions. I think you'll enjoy it too.
Let me introduce our panel. Beginning immediately on my right, American soprano who was last with us singing Paiacci, not singing Paiacci, but singing Nedda in Paiacci opposite Jose Cura, and was first with us in the wonderful opera by André Previn, A Streetcar Named Desire, Elizabeth Futrell. And to the right of Elizabeth, baritone from the UK, making his debut here at San Diego Opera, but certainly not his debut in the role of Germain, Alan Opie. And next to Alan, I put the two members of the British Commonwealth at the same table so that they would cause as little problem as possible during this panel. From Australia originally, and he directed such hits as The Pearl Fishers, Aida, Maria Stuarda, and Tosca in recent seasons, Andrew Sinclair. The tenor singing the role of Alfredo Germont from Romania, making his debut with us here at San Diego Opera, Marius Brenciu. And you may have seen him in the Metropolitan Opera broadcast of La Rondine by Puccini as the character Prunier. And then finally, at the end of the table, from Italy, making his debut with us here at San Diego Opera, Renato Palumbo, our maestro. I'd like to begin because this opera has a setting in life. It's based on a real story that happened to the author Alexandre Dumas Fils, who was the son of the man who wrote The Three Musketeers and The Count of Monte Cristo, but he wrote a sort of novel memoir based on his brief love affair with one of the great courtesans in Paris of the 19th century, and then based on the popularity of the book, wrote a play based on the book that Verdi had the opportunity to see. And Verdi went crazy for the property, of course, and wrote this brilliant opera in collaboration with his librettist, Piave. So I'd like to begin with Andrew, with our stage director. One of my questions is, how close is the original material, the written material? We'll talk about the real character of Alphonsine Marie Duplessis a little later, but the written material and the libretto, how do they compare and contrast?
Well, if reading the play, reading the novel, you do find that the libretto actually is a slightly simplified version. What you don't get in the libretto so much is the sense of the society in which Alphonsine Duplessis or in the novel and the play, Marguerite Gautier, existed. And this is very important because it is actually not just about the love affair that she had with Alfredo or Armand. It's actually partly the society they had to fight against, this the incredibly moral society, if you like, on one hand, but also the world of the demi-monde in which Marguerite existed. I mean, she was probably one of the most sought-after courtesans in Paris by the time she was 18. She died when she was only 23. And this was a society of greed and hypocrisy, and it was an extraordinary competitive society for the women. I mean, for instance, let me give you an example. You have two party scenes in Traviata. The first, when in Act One, which is Violetta's party, or Marguerite's party. And this is a very elegant party. She was one of the most enigmatic women of her age. This is why it's actually very difficult to do, because you have a very short time. How long is the first act? About 30 minutes?
Less.
And in that time, you have to establish this very enigmatic woman's character, which Elizabeth does actually superbly well, I have to say. And then in Act Three, you have Flora's party. And, you know, it has a Spanish dance, and it's a bit different. But that's actually not the point. The point is that Marguerite's, or Violetta's, is elegant, and Flora Bevoise is vulgar. She doesn't want to give an elegant party. Her idea of a party, a good party, is the fact that it would be in the newspapers the next day. You know, so you at least, we're trying to give you an idea of this society. If any of you saw the old movie with Greta Garbo, Camille, with Robert Taylor, this does give you a very good idea of this society. There are three awful so-called friends of Violetta, Flora, or Marguerite, and Prudence is the Flora character in the movie. And we have three very talented chorus ladies playing these roles. We've just introduced them. They don't do anything enormously outstanding, but they are there, and they epitomize in this production part of this ghastly society. So really, that for me is the major difference between the libretto. The libretto concentrates much more on the love affair and the tragedy of the death of Violetta. But I think there's a lot more background that you can play.
So as a stage director, you have the opportunity to fill in some of that color of the society, the atmosphere and the environment of the society that is missing perhaps in the libretto itself, in the text of the libretto, but that is in the original source.
One tries, but as I said, you know, the acts are so short. And so also you don't want to go too far outside what's there, because you don't want to overbalance the, you know, a carefully crafted dramatic situation between composer and librettist. But it is good just to play the background, to lift the background a little bit if you can. Okay, but you know, there are only those two opportunities to do it.
Which brings us to Violetta's source character. It's hard to, this character in whatever version of the story you see has so many different names. She's Marguerite Gautier in the book. She becomes Camille, and then Violetta. Does she have any other name? And of course, her original name, her real name, was Marie-Alphonsine Duplessis. I know you and I, Elizabeth, talked a little bit about her. Could you tell us something about this real historical woman who was active in the 1830s and 40s in Paris?
Well, as I recall, and Andrew, you can help me fill in the things that I forget, she had a sad background, a sad childhood. Her father, I think, was very abusive, actually, to her, and sort of sold her to...
He was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And yes, indeed, sold her into prostitution.
And so somehow she managed to sort of pull herself up by her bootstraps and figure out how to make a living in this society. And now it sounds really strange, but there, I don't think she had a lot of choices. And so you sort of have to give her credit. She used her intelligence and her wit and her charismatic personality, I think, which is just innate to who she was. But she sort of honed these abilities and found herself sort of at the top of the heap of courtesans.
Now, and I don't want to be too indelicate, but a courtesan... I like to compare it, especially when we're talking about opera, to Chocho-san, a geisha. I mean, not a lady of the evening, necessarily, not a prostitute, but a courtesan in Paris at this time was a very different creature, I think, and she was expected to be presentable in society, in a very real, and educated, and musical,
indeed.
And poetic, and
indeed, because for instance, Marie Duplessis actually had some of the most famous authors and musical figures and artistic figures, you know, in her circle.
Good friends.
Franz Liszt.
Yeah, Franz Liszt, famously, yes.
But now, does this color your? I mean, knowing that background, does this help to color your own approach to Violetta?
Well, sure. Andrew and I have talked a lot about this and how to sort of immediately let the audience see this person, this in the midst of this party she's throwing. What is it about her, you know, that draws people to her and that has advanced her career, so to speak, in such a way. And so yes, I try to find many aspects of her personality to portray this kind of person.
I find it fascinating that the real courtesan, Marie Duplessis, was actually invited to tea by some of the wives of her lovers, because they were so fascinated with her and couldn't figure out what it was about her that attracted the men. Mm-hmm. And they, to all reports, actually had a delightful afternoon with her, having lovely conversation. Now, it's not that they ever accepted her, but that, you know, that they were so curious about her. She must have had an amazing personality, a very dynamic personality,
yeah.
To be able to,
I think so too.
Attract the women as well,
yeah.
as the men.
Yeah.
Marius as Alfredo, do you find it? Did it help you to dig into the play or the novel and find out about Armand, who is the, or to find out about Alexandre Dumas?
Well, yes, because the biggest shock concerning Traviata for me was when I arrived in Paris and I was to see the grave of this lady, which exists still in the Montmartre cemetery, and it's her name on the grave is Alphonsine Plessis, which gives us also a certain idea of the fact that probably that due to the fact that she arrived in Paris and she had contact with the good society there, with the high society, she added even that Du Plessis, probably to be more in that style of that society. So I've been there, and of course it was a surprise to see that even now in Paris, at her grave, you have every day fresh flowers.
Mm.
This is a very interesting and touching thing. And to think also that in that moment of the history, human history, so in the she died in 1847, I think. A few years after, Alexandre Dumas' fils wrote the book, and just a few years after, Verdi wrote an opera. So she was extremely famous all over Europe in a few years, which in that time of our history was not so usual. The news were going quite difficult from one country to another. We had, let's say, local stars or national stars, but we didn't know so easily in Italy what was happening in France or in Germany or so on.
Well, just to pause, just one moment, I think what's interesting about what Marius just said is Marie died in 1847. The opera is 1853.
Yeah, so
that's remarkable to me, especially at that time.
So I think this is the most clear, the most evident proof that she was a very, very strong personality. Even she died at 23. It's not only by her beauty. She marked. We know that she was very generous, and we see this even in the opera. Even in her last moments, she's giving her last ten, let's say, dollars now. And I think it's very, very important for us to know that this lady really existed, and this probably helps us also in being on stage, knowing that this society existed and those characters existed, which is not the same for other operas. I mean, even in the famous Verdi's three operas in that period, in 1853, he did Rigoletto, Trovatore, and Traviata, and this is the only one with a real subject. I mean, it happened. Trovatore, Rigoletto, those are like a story. And we enjoy doing them too, but Violetta really existed. And this is for me also, yeah, really, really touching, and it means a lot when I go on stage to do Traviata.
Maestro, let's talk about the music of the opera, because it's always seemed to me that La Traviata is something different for Verdi when you consider the operas that he wrote before La Traviata. What is it about Traviata that makes it new, that shows Verdi perhaps experimenting or going in a new direction with the music?
Traviata is a very different piece of Verdi, a very different opera. If you think about, for example, Trovatore or Rigoletto or before Hernani and so, Traviata is completely a new wave, a new style of Verdi, a simple style, but perfect style. If you look at the music, if you look at the score, apparently it's so easy. Everything is easy. Everything is logic. And it's one message that immediately touch your heart, immediately. And it's incredible, like this opera go to the audience very simple, like a humanity message, one modern history, because remember about the Traviata, we have the same problem today sometimes, that the father won't help the son, and for save honor, money, and to find a good woman for marriage. And but in that time was more strong than now. Was for this reason, to put one courtesan on the stage was like a shock. As it's strange, like the I don't know what to say in English, censura, you know, that people that stop it, the piece.
Censor.
Yeah. Censor give the permission to do something like that. Maybe only for Venice, because there is a little bit more free, the atmosphere. It wasn't very, more free. How Verdi give one perfect description about the characters of the opera. the Violetta, the more complete, the Papa Germont, the most modern style about the tenor, the poor tenor, because it's a completely new style to sing. So we haven't a lot of top notes. We have very be careful about the intonation, about the styling, about how to spell. It's, in some time, I feel that we are not doing one opera, but one piece on the theater.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I think, is the important thing about Traviata. That sometimes you forget that you are there, then you listen to the music. You listen the word, you listen the this history, you are completely involved in the big power of these characters, of the history, and you suffer with Violetta, you understand Papa Germont, you hate a little bit the Alfredo, but it's a history very, very clear, very simple. And I think in the Traviata, Verdi touch one top level about the style, because then he came back a little bit with a big drama, big like a grand opera, like Don Carlos, something like that. But only this pure music, I think then we can find only in the last opera, only in the first half, we can find something like that. So simple, so clear. I thought about that when I visited in Paris the Picasso Museum in Paris. And you see the first period of Picasso, the blue period, the pink period is so classic, like the first Verdi. Then is the strong period during the Second War. But in the last year of Picasso, if you look at the painting, it's so clear, only one line, only a big smile. But And I think the very genius people in the art, the development of the styling become before normal, then very complicated, and then very simple, because the very big thing in the world is to be simple. And in the Traviata, we have the pure music, absolutely amazing, with incredible connection into the world, into the music, into the drama, into the first, second, third act, so similar, so nice, the proportion in the part, the proportion in the aria, in the duet, in the concertato. It's absolutely a masterpiece, absolutely, no way.
I'd like to turn to the singers and start with Alan, whom we haven't heard from yet, but I think you have one of the more challenging roles in terms of acting. We often talk about the challenges of singing some of these roles, but what are the challenges of acting the role of Alfredo's father, particularly in that marvelous duet in Act Two that you have with Violetta?
First, I must comment that it's a sign of the times that the British Empire only has one microphone. it's so true. I don't know about the difficult challenges of acting the role. Really, I'm sorry to say. You frighten me now.
You thought it was easy. Right?
Yeah. And I'm sure my colleagues don't think my role is much more difficult than theirs. It's a character that you have to adopt. You think about the position the man is in, and you go with that, and you try and put that into your own life and see how you would deal with the situation of a son who goes off and perhaps brings a little ill repute onto the family name. He's a man from the provinces, probably a successful nouveau riche businessman or something like that, I assume. Is that right? Would that be right? And
always ask the director.
Yes. And I think that you then take it from there, really. It's not necessarily a difficult role from that point of view, as long as you realize what he's singing and what he's going through, or you discuss with the director what he's going through. Especially when you're sharing a mic with him. Yeah.
And how about for you, Elizabeth, the acting challenge of Violetta? I mean, what's great about this opera is that these are very human characters, every one of them. These are not mythic or historical characters. These are human beings, mm-hmm. I think, for one of the most first and significant times in opera history. Mm-hmm. And they all have wonderful arcs that they go through mm-hmm. in this miraculous opera.
That's what I was going to say. She makes an enormous journey. In this opera, sort of psychologically and emotionally and physically. But what I would say is I think everything about her that is important and that is revealing is written into the music and the libretto. I mean, it's all there, and we're all finding this together, and we're in great hands here with Andrew and Maestro Palumbo. It's all there, and if we simply seize the music and do the music and deliver the text and really communicate the text, she evolves and she becomes extremely clear. She is clear. So I try to immerse myself in that. You know, and there's not just one way to do it. I've sung this role quite a few times now, and what I try to do every time I come back to her is start over, you know. I try not to bring everything that I've done before. I can't help bringing some things to it, but I try to be open to a new conductor in front of me and a new director in front of me and new colleagues and how they affect me and inspire me. But the character herself she's so complex and so rich. There's just no way that you could become bored or, you know, sort of mundane about singing this role. There's just so much there.
There are a number of places in this opera where a character has the same music maybe twice, usually twice, but a very different sentiment in the second verse. I think of Di Provenza, which is Germont's aria at the end of the first scene of the second act. I think of Sempre Libera, Libiamo, the same music, but the characters saying something a little bit different in the second verse or meaning something, even if they've got the same words, for uh-huh. instance, in Sempre Libera. Uh-huh. Because in Sempre Libera, which we all know and love, she's resisting falling in love with Alfredo. And then she hears his voice outside, like Freddy, you know, on the sidewalk in My Fair Lady, singing a remembrance of the duet that they had earlier in the act. And I asked you in the radio interview last week something similar, but I want to bring Maestro and perhaps some of the rest of you into this same question. Should that last verse be somehow different? Is it more frantic? Is she insisting that she won't fall in love now that she's actually heard his voice? Or is she beginning to fall, or, you know, how do you interpret it?
Well, it can be interpreted, you know,
in different ways.
And I've done it in a staging where actually Alfredo comes into the room and sort of sweeps her off her feet and takes her off at the end of the aria. So she does, you know,
that's interesting.
Turn over to him, so that sort of leads you to the next act where they're together. But we're not doing that in this production, and I think here she's trying very hard to to go even deeper into, and finding it very difficult to resist something that she doesn't feel she deserves, I think, doesn't feel that maybe she can sustain. There are lots of reasons she feels very vulnerable about moving into this love affair. And so I think it becomes even, she becomes more determined in the way
Andrew?
That
we're doing.
I think it's very frightening for her. A real love is something that she has never experienced. And we have to remember, she knows she is ill. I think we all tend to forget that Act One is her comeback to society after a long period of serious illness of tuberculosis. And this party is paid for by her protector, by the Barone. Now, if she falls in love with this man, she abandons that lifestyle, she abandons financial support. She knows she's not well, she knows she, you know, will have a limited time to live, she doesn't know how limited, but it's a very dangerous situation for her, and it's a very frightening one. So, as far as we know, at the end of Act One, she resists. She manages to resist. It's difficult for her, but she's frightened. So there's a freneticism and a desperation about it, and understandably.
Maestro, in doing La Traviata prior to this production, have you had conversations with Violetta's about Sempre Libera and how perhaps the second verse, the last verse, might be different?
First of all, we must be careful when we talk about Sempre Libera, because it's a terrible piece to sing.
So yes.
So when we talk about, before we try to resolve the problem about the speedy of the piece, about how the singer can, the soprano can sing this very difficult moment in the end of the first act that everybody knows, and everybody wait for that. So, first off, you know, I think the it's more important, like always, in Verdi we have aria and then we have cabaletta. The aria is always more important than cabaletta. You enjoy the cabaletta very much, because like when you go to the circle and you see the trapezist make beep, 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 you enjoy for that. But sometimes. The really drama happened in the for example before the Sempre Libera a Forse Lui. So the Violetta for the first time she looked for a real love. She doesn't hope about the to find a real love, and she feel afraid to find a real love. Because if you find that really love, you have to lose something of you, for give something more special, your soul, your heart, to somebody else. So it's much easier the relation with money, on the protection like the Barone did. But it's difficult when you put on the gambling your feeling, your really feeling, and it's very important in Traviata. How Verdi use the tonality about the music, because I'm a conductor, I have to talk about music. So, and when start after a wonderful recitativo that Violetta in 20 seconds, everybody is there on the stage, and then Violetta stay completely alone on the stage. So in a very rush finale, in few seconds, Violetta stay alone and think about the life. I think about this new feeling that this the young boy give to her, because this Alfredo, especially in the first act, in the second a little bit less, but in first act he's very cute. Very noble, very friendly. So, and everybody like to joke on the stage, the Flora with Marchese, the Barone with the other, and always with this music, like a horse, you know. And this poor guy arrived for the first time, look at Violetta, and speak about love. And Violetta say, "Sarie per me sventura un vero amore. Will be terrible for me, I really love, because I have to change my life. That I enjoy maybe this life, but I can't resist." And when we talk about the tonality, she starts to sing, Violetta, A forse lui, she's singing F minor, very strong tonality, very neurotic a little bit. And then the second part of the aria is the same theme, the same refrain of the first duetto, is in F major. A lot of time in this opera, we start with a minor tonality, and then we go to the same tonality, but major tonality. It's the most simple thing you can do in the music. Mm-hmm. But it's so logic, so nice, how change the words, change the feeling, and change the how to sing this music. When we talk about the end after that, that start the terrible, difficult rondo finale of Sempre Libera, in my opinion, Violetta start to resist, but how I told to the singers in the music rehearsal, it's impossible resist or it's impossible win some battle in A, B major. Impossible. In A major you can. In A flat major, impossible. Yeah. And for this reason, usually I, for you, to answer to your question, I never ask or I never talk with the soloist, with the character, about what do you think about that? We can do that, something nice. No, I don't. My work, my job is another. I have to respect the music and to explain what the music tell me to the singers. And I have to be very convincing to explain what the music told me. Maybe it's not correct, but 98% is correct. and in that moment, I don't talk about here you have to fall in love because you are so nice. No. I speak always technically. Because I remember when I was in a school, music school in Milan, my teacher told me, remember, when you talk with the singers or with the people in orchestra, don't talk about feeling, like appassionato, doloroso, or con fuoco, with fire. No. Somebody can take the fire and give fire to the violin, also on the stage. No. Yeah. You have to talk always about technique. When you say something logic, technically, then the feeling into me and the singers come immediately, I think. And then it's very important to have the same feeling and to have a good music relation with the producer, to have the same idea, because okay, here is one very logic and very classic production. Thanks God for that. Because if you go in some place, if you don't look at the book, you don't know if you look at Traviata or if you look at a grocery or if you look at a market on the beach. So for this reason, thanks God in this production we have one normal amazing Traviata. But it's very important to have a wonderful collaboration with the producer. With the producer, because, you know, the opera is one very big work. And nobody is the really protagonist of this opera. Everybody is protagonist. The leader role too, the leader character too. So the opera, remember, is one. It's like a bigger democracy. Everybody help everybody for make a wonderful success. The success of the singers is my success too. As for this reason, we have to work in this collaboration and very friendly, and to try to make our work better as possible.
Well, very definitely. Opera is a collaborative art and always has been. I'd like to do something a little bit different at the end of our round table. We have a number of young people who watch our round table on YouTube because we're videotaping it, especially students who come to our dress rehearsals, and they have some questions about opera and about singing that I think even those of us who come to these events regularly would like to hear some of the members of our panel answer. These are some of the typical questions that we would get from youngsters for our young artists who toured with the San Diego Opera Ensemble. They'd go to schools and perform, and afterwards we'd have a Q&A, you know, a question and answer. And what I've done is culled some of those questions just about opera and about singing, about acting, stage directing, conducting. And I'd like to offer some of these questions to our artists and see what kind of responses that we'd get. I think that might be very interesting for our young audiences as well as for those of you who are here today. So I want to approach, first of all, Alan and Marius. Opera singers are really loud. How do you make all that sound without a microphone? Marius.
Well, I think that Ellen has a louder sound than mine.
So. It's not true.
He can't. Don't build up their hopes. Don't. Well, as a technical point of view, normally in the university we study how to manage the voice. And what a pianist has with his instrument, what a violinist has also with his instrument, what we call the la boîte de résonance, we have with our head. And we are trying to produce the sound in a way which really will be as much as possible projected in the whole, with the help of this, those the sinuses, which are our resonance part, let's say. And of course we are very happy at the end when we got compliments, and we are very sad if somebody says that they didn't hear very well a certain point or a certain high note.
Alan, how about you?
I can't really add much to that. It's a matter of relaxation, I think, as well. The less relaxed you are, the tighter the sound becomes, and therefore the smaller the sound becomes, which is not a good thing. But one only hopes one's heard. That's you go out there, and in my position, I go out there and I hope that you can hear me.
How do you breathe? How does an opera singer breathe?
We have a special machine which is
You wish, you go, right?
Yes, yes. And the maestro pays the bill for the electricity of the machine.
I read a book by Tito Gobbi, and he put down 10 points to always remember. I can't. One of them was always look at the act you're going to do in the score in the dressing room just before you go on to do the act. Don't be looking at some other piece. And the other one, one of the others he put down was always inhale through the nose when you can. Sometimes there's not time to do that, but if you have time, it settles you down better to breathe in through the nose. You get the breath in the right place better than going... It's much higher, then it doesn't help so much. So one of them is breathing through the nose.
Okay. And this, I think, is for everybody, because memorization is an important part of performance, as much an important part, I think, for the stage director in the act of rehearsing and the maestro in conducting. How do you memorize your parts, and how long does it take you?
That's hard. That's a hard one to answer for me, because I'm sort of always working on different things at different times, and so it can take a long time to learn a role because I've got a lot of other things in between and I can't work on it all at once. That's always the way it is learning a new role. But I would say I sort of break it. I try to take it apart and really study the text, for instance, without the notes. And then maybe once I feel comfortable with that in my mouth, adding rhythm and then playing just the melody and thinking the text. And so I'm not always singing. I'm thinking a lot about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I write down the text to help me remember, you know, sort of over and over.
Mm-hmm.
Because the act of writing sort of helps... Yeah, yeah. Sear it into my brain. So those are some of my tricks.
Andrew, I was so struck the other day at rehearsal, and it just never dawned on me, but of course the stage director should know every word of the opera that he's directing. That just makes sense. But you have it memorized, and it was so easy for you, without the book in front of you, to go through all of the lines with the singers as you were staging them. Is this simply because you've directed La Traviata so many times, or is it important for you to have the libretto by heart before you even begin to work on any opera?
Well, ideally, it's important for me to try and know the whole thing by heart. It doesn't always work, because it just frees you from carrying a score around, mm-hmm. and sort of looking at it and saying, now, when you say, and particularly if, for instance, I did Katya Kabanova several years ago, revived the production at Covent Garden, I do not speak Czech. So, I know, it's a terrible...
So easy, Czech.
It is, maestro, you know. It's one of life's great crimes that I don't, I know. But I did take some Czech lessons, at least, so that when I had the score in my hand, I wasn't going, you know, which is difficult and embarrassing and, you know, and a little bit insulting as well. So ideally, I like to know it. It gives you a certain freedom when you're on the floor to think of something. I mean, with Elizabeth the other day, we were doing the last act, and I said, now we've got to do this because we need to get you out of bed. And I suddenly thought, wait a minute, no you don't. Now, if I'm carrying a score around, I'm going to be thinking about the text, and, you know, it's just not as easy. I've done Traviata quite a lot, and it, you know, either as an assistant director or as a director. So fortunately, a bit of it has stuck. But, you know, if I'm doing the Rosenkavalier, for instance, which I have directed in revival, it's going to take me a lot longer to learn that piece. I'm going to do a Salome next year, and I've started, and I think, when is this going to start going to the brain? But it really does help me, and it helps you to, as I said, to free you up, and just to think of new things when you're on the floor with the artist, because, you know, you do come in, I think you should come in, with a very clear idea of what you want to do. The rehearsal period is not there for you to wait for the muse to come and sit down beside you.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, you've got to have a good idea. Then when you meet the artist, and hopefully, you know, and the maestro, everybody has ideas as well, because as maestro was saying, it's a collaborative process. You know, we're all there to do it together. And suddenly you get a new idea from someone, you think, oh, that's great. But, you know, at least go in knowing what you want to do. And for me, if I, you know, at least have a good idea of the text, that really helps me.
Mm-hmm. Maestro, now this is a real question. How can I become a conductor?
I would like to know, too. I It's strange because it's some school for study conductor, of course, but there is incredible jump from the school to somebody give you one orchestra to conduct. I think it's a lot of, must be a little bit lucky too, that somebody trusts you and give you the possibility to do that. This happened to me when I was 17, 18, and some people very nice that conduct very well and with my same age, and they still waiting about somebody give this possibility. And this is the problem about the musician, that, you know, in the orchestra you have about 50, 60 people, but only one conductor. And it's a very good question, but it's difficult to answer this question. Mm.
Did you start as a pianist?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's more usual than, for instance, a percussion player or a piccolo player or, you know, someone.
The percussion player go more in tempo.
This for sure.
And that's not good for opera, I don't think. One more question for the singers. What is it like putting on makeup and costumes for your character? And does it take a long time? And I would add, what does it do for your character? What does it do for you as a singer, as a performer? Let's start with Elizabeth.
It takes a while. I don't know, it usually takes a half an hour, 40 minutes, depending on the makeup artist. It's an interesting transformation, you know, putting on makeup. I don't know that, unless I'm doing, I did once an opera, and I was a Chinese princess, and it, you know, totally transformed the way that I looked. And so that was unique. Most of the characters I play are sort of, you know, try to make me look,
they look like
I
you.
Am,
like
yes,
you, yeah.
A little better. So I think it doesn't have as much effect on my character, that part of the transformation, as all the work that we do 3 weeks, 4 weeks before. It's fun. I like playing dress up. Enjoy it.
Alan, do you enjoy playing dress up too?
what do you call the Fifth Amendment?
Play the Fifth.
It depends. Sometimes costumes and makeup are a bit cumbersome. And it can take a long time. If you have a bald pate, say you do Falstaff or something like that, then you have quite a big makeup job to do with a bald pate. That takes a long time. It's very uncomfortable. Then you have a lot of padding, and even I have a lot of padding for Falstaff. And that does change you. You walk differently, and when you are in that sort of costume, or even in a smart costume, you tend to walk in a different way. Once you get the walk, then you're halfway there anyway. So yeah. I think Peter Sellers said that. He had to get a pair of shoes to get the shoes comfortable first, and then when he knew what the shoes were like, then he could do the character. but it certainly does help, yeah. But it can be a drag as well.
Marius?
Well, being a man, and my only usual makeup being the aftershave. when I do an opera, it's quite difficult. And I really have an obsession, a personal obsession, when I am at the makeup. Before the performance, I have the impression that all the powders and things are going exactly on my voice, and I will not be able to sing anymore. But I accept it because it's part of the job. But the hardest things are when we do characters which are especially physically not of our age, when we are, let's say, a little bit older and we have to look younger, or vice versa. And I remember really a production which I did in 2002 of Idomeneo, and I was under 30 at that moment. And I was supposed to be a man of at least 50, And I had a huge wig. Idomeneo's coming back after 20 years of fights and so on. So he was with the long hair, old, and with a scarf on the face. I remember in that production. And the performances were starting at 6 p.m. My makeup session was starting at 4 p.m. And in the opera, Idomeneo enters after about 30 minutes. And with about 10, 15 minutes before going on stage, I was finishing my makeup, because I had also a huge costume and so on. And for the men, probably it's not quite easy always, but we survive.
Can I say that the big difference in Britain over the years that I've been in the business is that when we started, we all did our own makeup. And now that is not done at all. You have, I don't know, is that the situation here? I don't know about
you. No, you don't do your own.
You don't do your own makeup here. But
never.
That's changed completely. Hmm. Now you have makeup artists who do it all.
Hmm. Well, you were also saying to me in our radio interview that virtually everything that you studied and sang as a student was in English and never in the original languages, yeah. Which is another interesting difference between the American and the British system, at least until recently.
Well, I don't think the British system's like that now at all. The British system is just...
It was the same everywhere.
Yeah.
It was made in the national language.
Yeah. Right.
When all the productions were in the national language.
Yes.
Oh, well, we could go on and on with that subject, but we can't, because we've run out of time. I want to thank Maestro Palumbo, Marius Brenchu, Andrew Sinclair, Alan Opie, and Elizabeth Futrell from La Traviata for being with us and for answering those children's questions as well as the adult questions that I came up with just this afternoon. So thank you all very, very much for coming, and we'll see you at the opera.